welcome and happy new year from all of us here at the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and we're all a little bit gross in association with Flowers Unlimited. Right then, since we last spoke, we paninkered our way out of 3 points at the London Stadium in the last game of the year, coming home with just a point after our 2-2 draw at West Ham. We left the Amex on Saturday relaxed and chilled after what can only be described as a regulation win. Yes, a regulation win over Burnley. Then we added a point to the three we took off Man City earlier in the season with an impressive performance at the Etihad, and who are perhaps unlucky not to come away with all 3 points. Of course, the other big news this week was we welcome back our favourite German with Pascal Gross back in the stripes for the next 18 months. Just in time then for Pascal to face his favourite opponent as we head to managerless Manchester United in the FA Cup this Sunday. Joining me today as we look back over the week's events is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Jason Thackeray. Hello, Jay, how are you?
Hello, I'm very good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and we are very glad to see the back of December, aren't we?
Yes, very, very much so.
It is an aberration that under Fabian Hertzler, he's basically played 12 games across the two Decembers he's been here and not won any of them.
Well, like you say, it's a statistical anomaly, but then we can also throw out that he hasn't lost to Manchester City yet, nor to West Ham, nor to, I mean, there's all these things you can throw out there. Do you remember that one we did a few years ago? Or I think you sorted it out, AD. I think it was something like 8 years in a row or 10 years in a row, something like that. We didn't win in October.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, we hadn't won. It was a nightmare on London Road was the last time we'd won in October. And then
fast forward for a good 7 or 8 years. And like I say, it's a statistical anomaly because let's face it, in those intervening times, we got to the playoffs 2 or 3 times. So,
but they weren't in October.
Exactly. And that's the point. No one gets promoted or relegated in October.
Well, I don't know. Have you seen the Premier League table this week? But
well, the Wolves are making a fight of it.
Yeah. But then there'll be
which puts the West Ham game into perspective, doesn't it?
It is a bit weird, but let's talk about that West Ham game. Which, Jason, it does actually seem like a lifetime ago now. It was odd. I mean, West Ham are on the crest of a slump at the moment. They've been absolutely awful. Obviously, went to like bottom of the table by some distance. Wolves. And just absolutely stunk the place out. The fans are voting with their feet. No one turned up to the game against Forest this week. And it was a similar situation at the London Stadium when we went there just before the turn of the year. It is very much a case of Dr. Brighton, we'll see, you know, because, I mean, we really should have done better.
Oh, yeah. I found that game hugely frustrating at the end of quite a frustrating month. I think what annoyed me about December was, yes, we had Liverpool away, yes, we had Arsenal away. Those free hits, you never think you're going to get much out of those. But the two home games with West Ham and Sunderland, we were incredibly boring. And then against Villa and West Ham away, we managed to be completely suicidal. I mean, you know, drawing a game when you've had two penalties and, you know, when your central defenders nearly headbutt each other, create a second ball that your midfielder misses and allow someone with Jarrod Bowen's pace to get behind you.
I mean, that's been an Achilles heel for a while, though, hasn't it? That ball over the top, just a simple ball over the top and the high line. I mean, it's been largely eradicated, actually, since the early days under Hertzler, hasn't it? But
it's just that Villa are very, very good at it, and it's West Ham's only tactic.
Well, they've only got one player. I mean, Bowen is basically carrying the whole lot of them
moment. But he is. I was so disappointed when we didn't manage to sign him from Hull because I know they were sniffing around him at the time.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, yeah.
Don't get me wrong, he'd have gone to Chelsea by now, but, you know, Tony would have been just that little bit richer still. But, yeah, I mean, it's clear Jarrod Bowen is a quality player. And is it too harsh to say West Ham are a one-man team? Well, if they're not a one-man team, then the other 10 have really got to pull their socks up. But
Yeah, it's just weird. I mean, I don't understand how. I mean, obviously he's not been playing every game for them, but Callum Wilson is, when he has played for them, has looked all right. And basically they've released him. Basically, they let him go.
have they?
He's now a free agent. Yeah.
Good grief. I mean, it's a bit like getting rid of Danny Welbeck, isn't it?
Well, basically, I mean, he's a player that if he's available and no one else is picking him up, and we need a spare striker, I wouldn't say no, to be honest. He's got a proven track record.
Especially against us, though.
Well, you can't. Well, actually, he can score against us, can he? If he... But
Well, not these
moving on.
days, no,
Okay,
but.
I mean, there was some lots of controversy in this game, so let's just clear those up before we move on to
Can I just
the
say
game
that
on
our
Sunday.
penalties were not controversial? So let's.
No, I mean the rugby tackle one from that on Dunk, that was
I've
interesting.
no idea what Paqueta was moaning about. I mean, he clearly, absolutely. I mean, Joe Marler would have been proud of that.
Yeah,
textbook rugby tackle is how you teach how to tackle their first rugby lesson at secondary school.
You're just waiting for Bill McLaren's commentary there, aren't you?
I mean, I think the complaint really is the fact that this goes on in the box at every single corner. And it's very rarely given. So the fact that it actually was, and particularly so close after the other penalty, which I'm not going. I mean, it was a penalty. It was definitely a foul on Minteh, but it was like I was surprised that he gave it because it's like the advantage. Welbeck got the shot away afterwards and should have scored actually.
Go on, Jace.
I'm trying to remember it.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'll pick up on you've got a reasonable point there, AD, because like I say, it's that notion of double jeopardy. Is it's it was very fine because Welbeck's shot, which incidentally was terrible, Welbeck's shot was immediately after the foul. So, you're looking for an advantage, and you do have to be careful. Whether the referee plays an advantage, at which point he cannot then call it back, or he waits a few seconds. Now, outside the box, and this is the whole argument of inside, outside the box, are the rules different? Outside the box, there was at least a couple of instances where he gave it doesn't sound much, but 2 or 3 seconds, by which time the ball could be another 10, 20 yards away, but another 2 or 3 seconds. And the game will be called back. Now, obviously, if Welbeck had stuck it away, he wouldn't have given it. He'd like to think he wouldn't have given the penalty. But it was the fact that he blasted it over the bar, for me, says he gave the penalty. Yeah, you've got to see if there's an advantage. But if you're going to shoot like that, then there's never going to be an advantage, is
Yeah.
there?
Well, and then obviously, I mean, you can see what he's trying to do. I mean, obviously, I mean, there is a school of thought that if you have two penalties, someone else should take the second one. Particularly when you've got the one of the most successful penalty takers on the pitch in Premier League history,
Well, this
in
is the
James
point.
Milner, but.
But this is the point, isn't it? They have every club has its hierarchy of penalty takers. If you don't, that's when you get the real petty stuff. That they, remember that game with Chelsea a couple of years ago,
Oh yeah.
and they were
We've
bickering on
seen
the
it. We've
pitch,
all seen
and the
it.
manager was tearing what's left of his hair out. So you have that hierarchy. Now, the fact that Welbeck seems to be ahead of Milner is up for debate, but if that is the, what they've decided, and most managers will leave it to the players to decide between them. Some managers might say, right, you're the penalty taker and you're the second one, but usually most managers, and I don't know if it is the case with Hertzler, although you can imagine it is, he will actually, let's face it, every penalty taker that we're looking at the moment is older than Hertzler anyway, so does he really want to get involved in that petty argument?
The only good penalties are the ones that go in, aren't they, Jay? And if any penalty that's missed is a bad pen. But I mean, it just looks bad because of the way he did it.
It was just embarrassing because A, he's missed, B, he's wound up all the West Ham players and the West Ham fans and actually sort of given them reason to go at him. C, I know it's weird, it sounds like it's with hindsight, I would have given it to somebody else. My 19-year-old son was watching it together in the front room as it was given when don't let Welbeck take it. I mean, it's basic. Welbeck's not got a particularly great
Yeah.
record spot.
Okay.
But
What I
if
would,
he
sorry, what I would say, sorry, go on, Jace, yeah, go
I
on.
just, at least if he put his laces through and put it in the corner and the keeper makes a worldy save, I don't mind. The frustrating way he missed it
Yeah.
seemed to annoy everybody in the ground, really.
But
Okay.
that's the point. He did send the keeper the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know, it was the first one, like you say, AD, a good penalty is one that goes in. It wasn't a brilliant penalty. If the keeper had gone the other way, and it is, you're down to your guesswork. If the keeper had gone the other way, he would have easily saved it. It's a bit like, was it Brentford's two penalties? One time Verbruggen went one way, missed it. Second time, and for me, it's exactly the same penalty, exactly the same spot. He happened to go the other way, and it looked like a bad penalty.
It was a bad one, was it really bad? You
Yeah, but
completely
that's my
missed it.
point. The first one was, and I know that I'm arguing against myself here. You're right. If it goes in, it's a good penalty. But it was put in exactly the same place.
Well, let's just move it on to the controversy over the third penalty in that first half at West Ham, and that was the one that was given against Lewis Dunk. Now,
Who wants to go first? Who's going to rant the most?
this the image that the referee was shown on by VAR was the wrong image.
Well, there's that, but it was also a freeze frame, which doesn't give context. Was it you? I think it might have been, I could be wrong here, Jace. I think it might have been you that posted, actually, the ball hit his arm, hit his chest first and rolled down his arm, which, given the ridiculous complexity of the penalty law these days, I've got a feeling is not a penalty then, is it not?
It wasn't me that posted that, but I pretty much think that's what I saw as well.
Yeah. And shirt, if it hits the shirt sleeve, that is not handball.
Well, no, it clearly did hit his arm. Okay, I
Yeah.
mean, irrespective of anything else, it hit his arm. And when you saw the freeze frame without context, yeah, it looks like a great save. But two things. One, the West Ham player's no more than 2 or 3 yards away from him. Two, he's really thumped it. And three, Lewis Dunk's arm is in a natural position. He's falling. His arm isn't. It's we're talking. I think as bad a decision as that one from 2 or 3 years ago, where against Luton, the opening game of the season,
Oh, that was
where
awful.
his arm's behind him.
Last season, that was, yeah.
No, it wasn't the season
Oh,
before,
no,
because
it's two
Luton
seasons
have
ago,
gone
wasn't
down
it?
a
Yeah, it
couple of
was,
times
yeah.
since. Yeah,
Blimey. They've gone down twice, haven't they? Blimey.
exactly. So, yeah, I think it's a harsh one to be given. Like I say, you see it in freeze frame, it's a great save, but you cannot give a penalty. I'm sure you cannot give a penalty like that.
Well, it's just all conjecture. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, at least with goal line technology, it's black and white. It's either over the line or not. But with these,
Assuming that machine switched on.
that's true. But with a lot of all the other decisions, it's all down to the opinion of the referee or the opinion of somebody in 100 miles away in Stockley Park. It's just it's a bit mad. But it gives us something to talk about. Okay,
Sorry,
let's.
in that case, let me ask this of you, Jason. Given that it almost seems to be the case that as soon as a referee is called over to the monitor, that they then, do you think there's an element of the referees and the VAR and the match officials have a notion of sticking together rather than being seen to be contrary to each other?
No, because I think them saying go to the monitor is
You might want to go and have another look at it.
Stockley Park disagreeing with the on-field decision, so they've already done that. And I think normally in my head, if they go over to the monitor, I think, well, they are going to reverse this. But I think there was a game we were involved in where the referee didn't.
Yeah, I
Well,
remember it was
we've seen it
Lamptey at
happen.
Spurs. It was Lamptey at Spurs.
And it's Spurs, thank you. It was, yeah.
Now that's my point. It's a rarity, isn't it? Sorry, the thing I was talking about was when the referee gets called over, is then that he'll agree with the
Yeah.
VAR rather than VAR correcting the referee. It's like, okay, I've gone over here. And like you say, it's very rare because it looks like they're bickering with each other. If the VAR says, have a look at it, and the referee says, no, it's fine. That was
Yeah.
the question I was asking.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, Joel Veltman became the 15th player, Albion player this season to score, which is good. And then we say goodbye to December and hello to 2026. Now,
Did we also say goodbye to Minté for the time being as well? Because he hasn't. That's the game he went off with a
yeah,
quite dead
maybe.
leg.
Oh, yeah, but he'll be back. He'll be back. He's just got a dead leg.
Well, yeah,
He'll
not
be fine.
goodbye, goodbye, but goodbye for the time being.
Yeah, but one person we did say hello to. Rumor started circling on New Year's Eve that a certain former player was going to be returning. And no, it wasn't Bobby Zamora or Dean Hammond. It was...
Or Peter Ward.
It was our lovely, lovely Pascal Gross, Jason Thackeray.
I was so delighted. Pascal was my favourite Albion player ever. I think this debate's been running today on North Stand chat. Funnily enough, because someone asked whether Mitoma was our greatest ever player, and then everyone comes in for Lawrenson or Ward or whoever. Pascal Gross, I'm not going to say greatest, but he is my favourite player because he's so creative. He's been at the centre of, you know, every centre of everything. If we're going to get an assist when he was playing for us, that assist was almost certainly going to come from him.
Yeah. It's
zero pace, and yet he can turn people inside out.
By standing still.
He loves Brighton. It's just, you know, everything was perfect. I knew about it a little bit before New Year's Eve, but wasn't allowed to say anything. But that... picked up. Well, he's there'd been some idle chatter, and then we went to Arsenal, and one of Jack's friend's sons is involved in local property and had knew someone who'd shown Pascal around a couple of houses.
I do love those tenuous links. So really there's tenuous. My cousin's hairdresser's sister is, you know, they know someone who can lip read. They were in the sauna one time when
Yeah, but I mean, there is that debate. We've had the exactly the same debate on this show, haven't we, Al, in regards to is Pascal the greatest ever Albion player? But there's no metric which you can actually use to actually measure this. But the fact that what he achieved with us the first time around and the level that he actually did it at would put him in that conversation.
I think so. I mean, this is why when Jason mentions either Wardy or Lawrenson or something like that, before we got promoted, I think it was kind of understood, especially from those who had seen him play, that Lawrenson was our greatest ever player. One, he was the best player. In two, the sign that got promoted and then stayed with us and then obviously went on to great things with Liverpool. So there's that metric, and it's not an unreasonable one. And let's face it, Lawrenson was probably one of the better players in his era. So if you're looking at it now, yes, one, we are in an era where Brighton are at their highest peak ever. Not at the moment, obviously, but in that sort of general area, you average out the last three of... Someone actually did do a stat of the last, I think it's five seasons. We're actually in about something like sixth or seventh position. Anyway, so... And of that, one, Pascal Gross has won player of the season twice. Two, his stats are that he's the third highest scorer in the top division ever and his most assists, which is a new thing being counted. But so his stats are there. There's the entertainment factor of the Gross turn, which a lot of people sort of credit Cruyff for. But I think that, you know, the Gross turn is frankly how it should be known as. And as Jason said, with no pace, he can absolutely beat. Yeah. And he can send several defenders to the shop just by standing still. No one else does that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, on Saturday...
Sorry, AD, I have to ask this question though, mate. Mm. Is it a case of, I know where I was when I heard this news?
No.
Were you drunk?
No.
Why not?
No.
Jace, do you remember? I mean, obviously, you got the tickle from this, Jace, as to how it happened.
Yeah, so I got a little tickle from somebody, but that was very much a maybe sort of thing.
Right. Then
I can remember exactly where we were the second time. We were in Miller's in King's Cross after the Arsenal game.
Yeah.
But, Yeah. On, as we were all travelling to the Amex on Saturday, the teams came out, and there was a surprise that Gross was actually in the squad. I wasn't expecting him to be in the squad.
Why not?
Because it's unusual for a player to sign the day before and not have any training sessions with anybody to go straight into the squad. So,
well, the word on that. Hang on, I'm going to sort of caveat that, because the word on the street, and I say, if Jason certainly knew sort of a few days ahead of time, and as we understand it, one of the reasons and I think this was there was this came from the Dortmund manager. One of the reasons that Gross wanted to be here is that he wants to play for Germany in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And if he's not getting the full minutes that he wants to or needs to at Dortmund, then something has to give. And as the thing comes up, you know, Pascal saying to Tony Bloom, well, I wouldn't sign for any other Premier League side. There's also the thing that his kids were born here. So I don't know if there's a homesick issue. I don't know. I couldn't say. So everything with the right was on the wall. And as I understand it, the tickle that I heard was that they want the club that he wants to come back in the summer. But the Dortmund wanted a bit too much money for him. So this is something that's been clearly brewing for a while. So when you say you were surprised, one, he has been playing, albeit not fully, but two,
yeah.
So he was not necessarily Premier League match fit, but he was in a position to get going from the start.
Oh yeah. I mean, it does help the fact that, I mean, it was only a year and a half ago that he actually left. So basically a lot of the playing staff are still the same players that he was playing with before, but you know, it's new players, new manager, new systems. It's just unusual for,
yeah, I suppose,
for something to happen the day before. Normally I was expecting Pascal to be introduced on the pitch at half time and everyone gets that warm fuzzy feeling, because I mean there was it did affect the atmosphere on Saturday. Everyone was happy to see him back, and you know, that moment when he actually did come on, you know,
was
there was a laying every time he touched the ball, and you know, everyone was just praying, hoping and praying that he was actually going to do his party trick, but it just didn't come to fruition. But the first time that he does actually do that, the roof is going to come off.
Well, the other thing that you're saying here is that when he came on, I'm convinced that the cheer for when he came on was bigger than for the two goals. But the other thing is that
it was certainly bigger than it was for the second goal. But we'll come to that in a minute. Okay, so Kerry Matoma was back in the starting lineup after his absolutely fantastic cameo at West Ham. Actually, Al, we were talking last week about Jorginho Ruta as well, and the fact that he's been a bit of a passenger this season. He hasn't actually really shone, but his cameo when he came on at West Ham was showing that, oh, hello, here he is, he's back, and he continued that form again against Burnley, Jay.
How many times is it that a player comes on having been dropped or rested or whatever word you want to call, they come on with 20, 25 minutes to go and then play like absolute dervishes? I mean, it's almost the same. It's the same with almost everyone. Look at, you know, most classically, you know, let's go back to the Man City game at the beginning of the season. Those four substitutions, everyone came on and we were absolutely brilliant. So, yeah. And it's all about Fabian managing the 16 people on the pitch or the 20-man squad or whatever it might be. So, yeah, when Rutter comes on, then I had every... It's almost the case of actually, right, just I'd actually stick him on the bench myself and let him wreak havoc for 25 minutes rather than frustrate us for 90.
Yeah, but I've but the last week since the turn of the year, he's basically shown that form is coming back, and long may that continue. But I mean, what I really want to talk about here, Jace, is myself and Al were talking about it after the game on Saturday, and what that is, it's partnerships, and you know, we haven't really seen an awful lot of people building these relationships on the pitch, but one that we did actually see on Saturday was that between Ferdi Kelly-Olu and Kerry Matoma, and I was absolutely buzzing.
So I think there were two. We've mentioned another one of the players. We'll come back to that. Yeah, I thought Kadioglu was superb. He's probably my man of the match. I thought there was almost sort of instant chemistry in terms of that partnership that he had with Matoma. Yeah. They seemed to know what each other was doing. It helped. Matoma's not as good at tracking back, I don't think, as Minty, but he did come back and help his mate out, as well as Kadioglu sort of helping him up there. So that partnership looked fantastic, if I'm honest, albeit against quite a poor Burnley side. I think the other one, and you've just mentioned him, is Ruta was starting, but he was starting back in the sort of number 10 CAM type position, not fine. And his partnership with Babis was fantastic. I thought Babis was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, oh, wasn't it? I was
You,
just.
what have you done, Jace? Because now you've actually mentioned him, AD is now going to go stratospheric.
Well,
I don't blame him.
I've got it written down right here. I've got it written down
Go
right here. So,
on then.
I mean, obviously, Babbage thought he'd open the scoring. Sadly, he hadn't. But I mean, what a
That
finish
was a
it
great
was,
finish.
and
Superb finish.
it
Oh, fire.
actually it was actually a lot closer than you actually originally you thought, Al.
Well, no. Well, offside is offside, but yeah, when it's the pass and you the specific position of, because I think what it was that the defender's kind of leaning forwards, and so is Babis, and of course that means that they almost like form a V shape when you're looking across them in a cross section. I know what I mean. So therefore, the offside bit is, you know, sort of like a fingernail or something like that, but.
The VAR has taken away the concept of level, and it is my biggest issue with VAR.
Well,
Very long time. They were level.
there was controversy with this. I can't remember what game it was, but basically, the
You're not thinking
groundsman.
Snicko here at the Ashes.
No, there was a groundsman, and basically he'd done the lines on the pitch slightly wonky. I don't.
That's trolling, that is.
And basically, so when the VAR lines came out, the line wasn't straight. And basically, it wrote, but he's onside. You can see by the lines. And it was really
Right. Yeah, but that could easily
freaking.
back. If, I don't know if that was trolling, that could easily backfire as well. So,
I think all
no,
groundsmen should do
I
it.
to the naked eye at the time, I felt he was offside, and so when it went in, and yes, it was a brilliant finish, really confident, didn't seem to have a worry in the world,
Yeah.
but I didn't go, you know, loopy for it because I
Did
thought the flags.
you spot his celebration though, Jase?
He pulled out a half archer, didn't he? He did
Yeah,
sort of.
it was a little nod to his mate. A little nod
Oh, is that what it
to
is?
Simas.
Yes.
And then but obviously it was pulled quite quickly. But yeah, I mean I really, really enjoyed his performance. I mean, he should have come away with a goal. He did have other chances to score.
Let's
And
face it, he missed the sitter, didn't he? And under
he
the
missed two.
circumstances, that was a sitter.
He missed two sitters, I think. But
What was the other one then? I'm
no,
thinking of the one
there
where he
was.
nicked the ball and then just shot straight at
Yeah,
the
and he
keeper.
struck. That should have been the goal, but he shot
Oh.
straight down the middle, and it was easy for the goalkeeper. And then there was the one that where he just couldn't quite get his studs on it, but he got enough on it to take the ball away from Ferdy.
I remember, yes. I mean that was a. If you're going to say that was a chance, I think that's harsh. Unless you, like, I don't know. I suppose yeah, the fact he got there means yeah, he should have knocked it in. But
Yeah.
and
But I
no
mean,
no
it
the
was a bit of
he's a
politics,
real
isn't it?
potential, and I can see why he wasn't played against City, but he is a real potential.
Well, it was injured. That's why.
Was
Who's the
it?
best partnership? Is it Rutter and Costales, or is it Babis and Jorginho?
But you know, it's these partnerships on the pitch. It's very, very important to have them. And you know, and you saw that now. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Man City game in a minute. But it's like you know, we saw Pascal come back into that midfield, starting against City. And you know he's going to be there, and you know it's who is he going to be partnered with, because it means that someone will be missing out. So
Well, Pascal and anyone will work, so don't worry about
it'd
that.
be interesting to see what gives on that one.
Listen. Fabian is really, really, really going to overuse Pascal because he has to.
Well, I don't think he will. I think he'd dip him in and out. I mean, very much in the same way that Milner. I mean, basically, you know, if you want a pacey midfield, put Milner and Gross together. That'd be great.
Do you think that Milner is, and do you think Milner and Gross are too similar? Or do you think there's enough of a difference that they can play together?
I think they can definitely play together. They're both very, very, very intelligent footballers. So.
Well, it's a midfield of Dad's army, isn't it?
Yeah, and you need some legs in there as well, but it's
Yeah.
yeah, we will see. Okay, well, I mean, Georgie did open the scoring for us in this game. Another nice fired in finisher from close range. But yeah, I mean, you said it yourself, Joe. I mean, Burnley were terrible. I mean, they did have chances. It was a nice save from Bart at the end of the first half. Obviously, Ferdy had to clear off the line as well in the second half. But
I'll tell you what, can I just say about that? That was a lot closer than I realised at the time. Now, admittedly, it was quite a melee and you're looking from 70 yards away. But then I saw a match of the day, I'm thinking that was really close.
They had to bring out the goal line tech for that one.
They did. They did. And yet, weirdly enough, I don't think anyone from Burnley was claiming it. But, you know.
Okay. But, Jace, why don't you tell me about the best goal you've never seen?
The best goal I've never seen?
And the best goal you've never seen.
Please don't
Were you back in your seat in time to see IRE?
I saw the IRE goal.
Yeah.
Now, let's face it. It was Shandy that didn't see it, wasn't it?
There was quite a lot of people. I was on my own in my aisle.
I was back. I saw it. I was celebrating. Probably helped by the fact that I went down for a pint on 42 minutes, so I'd actually finished on time.
Ah, so you missed Bart's save then?
I missed Bart's save, yeah.
Right.
But it was, I mean, there was an awful lot of people that missed the goal. I mean, particularly when they're running the highlights back on the concourses afterwards, there was a lot of people that were seeing that goal for the first time. It was quite hilarious, really.
Yeah, all I would say is that actually, I would say that Iari's finish, and let's face it, we're going to do a polarity reversal on him shortly, but his finish, I think, was every bit as good as Kostoulis's disallowed finish.
It was, but what was great about it was the first touch. He could have been tempted to hit that first time, and just taking it around the back of the defence to open the angle up was fantastic. Yeah.
And it's also a goal which, if we had conceded, I would be doing my pieces defensively. Yeah. Burnley were a shambles at that point.
Yeah. It was nice to see him actually get the ball between those two, those white stick things that he keeps missing. But
he can do that. It's just he doesn't get it under the one that goes across.
Okay. Anyway, so before we move on, there was a couple of other bits in this game which I just wanted to point out. There was a moment in the first half where on the halfway line, where Carew just left the defender for Ted, and it was just that turn was just so sumptuous and gorgeous.
I haven't seen it since, but I'm still of the opinion he miscontrolled it and then was on his bike.
No, he didn't. It was basically he basically just got it and turned on a sixpence and he was away. It was like
Well, let me offer this.
It was Kyle Walker as well. So it's like
it was Kyle Walker,
yeah. But Kyle Walker is actually he's part of Dad's army as well.
But yeah, he plays
actually, walking
football.
Let me ask this of you, Jace. All right, it's only been sort of I don't think it's been three complete games or however many it's been, but. What do you reckon to now he's finally seems to be back in the team and you know starting? What do you reckon to Mitoma's form at the moment?
I think he looks like he's in better form than when it just before he got injured, and whether that's because we've worked on him, whether it's because we're giving him more of the ball because we don't have Minty, I don't know. I would expect him to have been in better form when him and Minty are both playing because you can't double up on both of them.
I think it's because we've been patient, Jay, frankly. I think we've always, because he's such a vital player for us, and both on and off the pitch, actually, because, I mean, obviously he is totally box office And obviously the Japanese people that come over specifically to like to
I
see
I don't think
Carew,
that's the reason as to why
well,
we
yeah,
are
no,
or
I'm,
not
I'm,
playing.
I'm coming
but...
to that. I'm coming to that. So basically, but the fact that we generally try to rush him back because he is that so important for us on the pitch. We've been a little bit more patient. We've given him the time to recover, and you know, and we will now reap the benefits of that because a fully fit Carew is just, it's just box office.
Just to reiterate the question I asked then, Jace. I mean, you reckon he's in pretty decent, he looks in pretty decent nick at the moment.
Yeah. I thought Burnley were dreadful, so it's easy to be in good nick, but I thought he was fantastic against City as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just really want to see more of that partnership with him and Ferdy because I mean that should have happened last year, but obviously they were both.
Well, I don't think Ferdy was ready, was he?
Well, no, he was rushed back as well, and he did his and basically obviously he did his toe, didn't he? So it was it was frustrating.
Footballer's injury.
Yeah,
really,
I mean hopefully we can push on now and start pushing up the table because. If with these partnerships, these players,
are just, I it's been a bit of a lackluster start to the season, I think. I think there's not been, the performances haven't been great. And the performances I've seen this year are
I'm going to
definitely
counter
a
that,
step
but
in the right direction.
I'm going to counter that by saying I think that the performances are better than you're making out. It's just mostly, for the most part, our finishing has been woeful.
Maybe.
We would
Well,
possibly still be in the League Cup,
nah,
but for
we
better
had
finishing.
we West Ham at home. I think our XG was something like 0.2. Now, I'm not a massively, I'm famously not a massively big fan of XG, but if it's that low, then nah.
I mean, those are not necessarily the norm. There's just been games where, I mean, we've discussed it on the show many times. We cannot play like maniacs for 90 minutes. It doesn't happen. It just can't be done, and that's where injuries come in. But there's times where we look comfortable. Well, against Burnley, that's one of those. I mean, you use the word regulation. Regulation for me is when we win against poor sides week in, week out. I prefer to say did it without. Getting out of second
It
gear.
was just stress free.
It was.
There was
Are you
no
sure?
drama.
Because I was convinced that Burnley were going to do something. One of our players would make a drop a wicket, and then Burnley be back in it 2-1, and then that's
Well, yeah, of
stressful.
course. I mean, obviously, when we were 2-0 up in the 86th minute, I mean, I looked at the clock and thought, oh, here we go. And
Yep. Time to go.
here we go. But moving swiftly on, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. The show is in your ears in association with the fabulous Flowers Unlimited, Alan.
It is 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. It's the 8th of January. Do you need flowers now? Well, you must have people who are family, friends, loved ones, or someone else's loved one. This is Brighton, anything goes. In which case, do help yourself to buying some flowers, or some
Yeah.
champagne, or some chocolate,
No,
or
of course.
some kind of table decoration, or anything. There's so
Yeah.
many things that Flowers Unlimited do. Dave Costa is the owner of that place. A long-term Albion fan and a generous benefactor towards Radio Reverb through the Albion Roar. We thank Dave for his sponsorship of the
And
show.
Al, of course, it's January. And you know what comes after January?
Oh yes, Valentine's Day. What's that? Anyway, listen, I love my wife every day of the year. I don't need the card industry to tell me, But having said that, as much as I say, don't use the card industry, by all means, do use the flowers and go to Flowers Unlimited. So that's 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk. And don't forget, if you're an Albion fan, you are entitled to a 20% discount, provided you tell them that.
I'm Dean Gallagher of Brighton Hove and District Samaritans. Many of us go to football without a care in the world, as an escape from our everyday lives. However, many of us carry our burdens with us into the game and beyond. If you feel you need to speak with someone, call a friend. Or if you see a friend in trouble, please do reach out. Being truly listened to can make such a difference. You can call the Samaritans on 116 123 or see us on a home match day. Let's kick off the conversation.
Okay, well, I'm moving swiftly on. So we went up to the first trip to Manchester this week, and to face Manchester City, who are very much in the title race. And
They were.
well, I think Arsenal were probably the real benefactors last night on this one.
Absolutely.
But it was, but I mean, Jace, it was a performance that I was really proud of last night. I thought we really put in a shift. And I think obviously City did have chances, and that they're always going to have chances. Obviously, they're at home. They're one of the best sides in the world, with the best manager in the world. So that, and with the best striker in the world. But it was one of those ones where to come out of there disappointed that we only got a point, that's a step in the right direction, isn't it?
Oh yeah, 100%. I thought we were excellent. It's probably I was at Forest away. I think this was probably our best away performance other than Forest
Agreed.
away, and probably against a better team. I would love to have known, have that crystal ball, if Pascal had put the header in after about 90 seconds, or if Cadioglu had put the one-on-one away just shortly after that. We'd gone 1-0 up early doors. Would we even have taken 3 points in that game? Because it all plays out differently then. And we really should have taken one of those chances. But that notwithstanding, we made a few rickets in defence, gave us a few, a couple of problems. But
Yeah, I mean that there's rickets and there's rickets.
There is, isn't there?
And then there's mercifully somehow, Jace, there's unpunished rickets.
Yeah. Well, I've got it down here. I've got the art of shooting yourself in the foot, and then I've got the art of shooting yourself part two. Yasin Ayari.
Well, let's put it this way. Even the great sides that you mentioned there, AD, are capable of completely nosing it up in front of goal. Because let's face it, they should have been two. There were the two guilt-wrapped chances. I mean, thankfully, Bart, it was poor shooting, but Bart was in the way, and there was the other one that just went wide. I don't want the side to stop doing that thing of playing at the back and trying enticing them, because it is a confidence thing. And let's face it, we're talking about it because it so rarely happens. All right, it happened against Arsenal with Verbruggen passing out to Gruder, but even then, that was still a good 40, 50 yards away from goal. It happens. Well, these days it's happening. This has happened, what, two, three times this season compared to last season, where it was a little bit more on the regular side. It's just that you've got to exercise total control. You've got to exercise total concentration. And Ayari was, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and the best I can say is he was overconfident with what he was doing. I think the more sort of truthful way of saying it, he was just not paying attention to what was going on, especially Man City. Now, the fact is, he did have the good grace to look absolutely crestfallen when he was subbed. There was a shot of him
Yeah,
back
on the
on the
bench,
subs
wasn't there? Yeah.
bench. He had the good grace to look crestfallen. I'd like to think that, well, it's not a learning curve. He knows how to do it. He knows how to be part of it. And I could see that it was one of those that I wouldn't say it was a punishment that he came off. It's just along the lines of, I think he scared the bejesus out of Hertzler, probably scared the bejesus out of everyone. But at that point, is his confidence gone on the pitch? And bringing Milner on is no bad thing. But of all things that's going to happen, you think, oh my God, you've done that. Imagine if you did it against Man City. Oh, you just did.
Yeah,
And we got away with it.
we got away with it, and even if we hadn't, I mean, maybe we'd have lost that game, but to an extent, it would have wiped its face because Burnley were playing out from the back when they had the ball on Saturday. Ngatuku basically got robbed in a very, very similar position, and it was Ayari that scored from it. So,
Yeah.
he,
Yeah.
you know, he
Well,
3 days before that, he's seen one of those errors being made, and he's gained from it and scored us a goal.
yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Milner. He's now 3 appearances away from levelling Gareth Barry's record. Did you know that 4,776 players have made at least one Premier League appearance? And James Milner has played against 2,300 of them.
No, I didn't know
I'm so glad I'm sitting down, frankly.
that.
Yeah, no, it's yeah. We got away with it. Your quick pre-see on the game. Yes, I thought that defensively. I thought we were absolutely, apart from those rickets, I thought defensively we were superb. I just feared that the problems we had were when we got the ball in defence and then trying to mount an attack, that some of our midfield players on the ball, rather than off the ball, but on the ball, were a little bit careless. And yet, we're then back to Ruta, and in those first 10 minutes, I think he proved that he's not necessarily the line leader by playing that sort of slightly withdrawn. Well, he didn't have one role. He had
No.
every player has several. But some of those through balls, and I'm sure you've got this written down, AD, some of his through balls were absolutely sublime, especially for that one for
Yeah,
Ferdi.
I've got a gorgeous ball from Georgie puts Ferdi in on goal, but he couldn't finish. I mean, that was one of them. Actually, I mean, you said that. I mean, I actually said it on the WhatsApp group last night as well. That actually, I mean, he was essentially playing a nine last night. Essentially, that was his
But
main
his
role,
best moments.
and that was the best I've seen him do that.
But
Yeah.
his best moments were when he's playing that through ball was like a number 10 doing that. If
Yeah.
number 10 Glenn Hoddle did that, you'd say, what, wow, what a pass.
Yeah. But I mean, it was. I mean, it was such a great ball for Ferdy, and it's disappointing that that Ferdy couldn't finish. But I've been watching that again, and I've got a slight issue. Could Carew have done more to get himself into the box, because he kind of slowed down his run?
No, I think. Sorry, go on. Because Jace, do you want to take this one?
I'm trying to think. It's not something that occurred to me at the time. Possibly.
I mean, I was watching it again before we came on air today.
At the time,
and I just think that basically, Ferdy was no one else was making the run. It was just Ferdy. Yeah. Carew was started like to come in, and if he'd had actually arrived into the box at the same time, then it would have been a ball across the box and a tap in.
A ball and a tap in, yeah.
Can I make the point here in that case that then when there was a chance that Ruta had, he tried to do just that instead of just once shooting?
Yeah, well, is this the one where he beat the offside trap?
Yes.
No, he tried to get the shot away. No.
You can see he was trying to pass it across.
I'm prepared to give Kucinov the benefit of the doubt on this one, because that was a goal saving tackle.
Well, I could see he was actually trying to pass it across. You could see him do anything of it, because he was looking across to Carew. You could see him take a look, and you think, this is the one time where you think, take your damn shot.
Yeah.
And it's down to, once again, decision-making, play or pass, pass or move, whatever it might be. And I say, in some cases with Rutter, it's try and beat 26 players. He really, really wants to beat Gary Nelson's record, doesn't he?
Okay, well, Manchester City did take the lead in this game, and it was another penalty conceded.
Yes, it was.
I didn't think it... Well, so let's rewind that back.
Go on.
I thought it was at full speed on the TV, and then when they showed the first angle, the first VAR angle, I thought it was a clear dive. And then when you go across, you can make a case for Doku running into his leg, or you can make a case for Gomez tripping him up. Gomez shouldn't have hung the leg out.
He shouldn't have put the leg there in the first place. That was amazing.
He made the referee make a decision. He gave him a decision.
I don't think that Doku went down in a natural way. I think he
looked to be going down before he was looking for it.
But
Gomez obliged him. That's the point.
Gomez gave him the option of putting the leg there. I mean, if it was the other way, I'd say penalty all day long, really. But
absolutely. I mean, there is that notion of soft penalty, which, you know, is a phrase I hate. But, okay, if someone's going to say that was a soft penalty, well, a soft penalty is still a penalty.
Yeah.
You know,
But we did get ourselves back on level terms in this game, and it was a brilliant goal from Karim Mitoma.
It's superb. What a finish again. And... you know, pretty much not exactly out of nothing, because do you know who got the assist, by the way?
Iari.
Yeah, it was Iari.
It was an Iari ball across the goal. Getting an assist for making a 15-yard pass that if it gets intercepted, we concede, might not be the greatest thing in the world. But oh my God, what a finish.
It's just the fact that it went through Nico Gonzalez's legs as well. That was pleasing.
Yeah, but almost, I think that's deliberate. I mean, he finished with
I mean, the commentators on the telly were really criticising Gonzalez for that, but that's the way the cookie crumbles. I mean, it's almost a natural thing. You dangle a leg out in hope of blocking it. Yeah, it then creates a space between. But then if he hadn't done, then you could have actually then put it in the gap between the two. It's really harsh to blame him. I'm going to give all the credit to Carew and on offer none of the blame to Man City, apart from the fact that during that particular period, I mean, let's face it, we started that second half absolutely abysmally. That was that 10-15 minutes. And, you know, when you think of the goal was scored against the run of play, I mean, I couldn't actually put that more bluntly than last night's game, because, you know, we couldn't trap a bag of cement, and then Carew comes up with that piece of magic, and then after that you could see City were really wavering, not unlike the game at the Amex.
And you know what I put it down to, Jason?
No, go on.
The yellow kit.
Yeah, well, not the not lilac kit, let's just say.
It's all down to the kit.
The yellow kit has a far better record than the lilac kit. That's
of course it does. Yeah.
True.
Yes, it does.
But I think it might even have been Darren put that on North Stand chat.
Can I make another
point?
It's not
difficult to have a better record than that nation, is it?
I think that was an old stat, and then our friend Chaley Gems updated it today, and now the yellow kit's got an even better record.
So is it the case we haven't won in the lilac kit yet?
No, we haven't, no.
No, we haven't.
So can I just make this observation? You know, let's get away from kits. It's got nothing to do with it. I mean, look, you can be as superstitious as you like. You know, you can count magpies, or you can watch about cracks.
Seagulls in this case.
Yeah. So it's going back to a point you were making in the Burnley game, AD, but forwarding it to the City game, is you were talking about partnerships. Now, and again, we're back to Ferdy, who incidentally at the moment is a rapidly improving player, is that he was playing at right back against City, and him and Hinshelwood did a brilliant job, I thought, doubling up on Doku.
Hinshelwood was playing right back. He was playing left back.
Well, they kind of swapped a lot. They spent a lot of time doubling up on Doku, and as such, I thought he was relatively ineffective. Whereas there was more than one occasion where De Kuyper was actually exposed a bit too much against, I want to say, Bernardo. But the doubling up on Doku, I thought, was actually really, really good and effective, and actually closed down one of the lanes of attack that City might have had.
Well, if we're going to talk about that, we've got to talk about Van Hecker on the Man Baby. That was a battle for the ages. Like,
it always is, isn't it?
It is.
Don't think they like each other.
They're like a Kiwi and South African hooker in the scrum.
I mean, it's a battle of the wannabe Bond villains, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that. I mean, Van Hecker, in the first place, I'm sure Haaland does, he's just got the look of someone who wants to go bare-chested into a forest just to shout at some bunny rabbits. He's just got that mad look about him. And let's face it, he's not backwards in coming forwards. He's no shrinking violet. And when it comes to this absolute man mountain in Haaland, he's thinking, well, the harder they come, the harder they fall. And those two just like to slug it out. I mean, let's face it, you could actually just pay your money to watch those two knocking bells out of each other, wouldn't you?
100%. I mean, I played only in public, but I played centre-back. I know how difficult it is to deal with someone like Haaland, and Van Hecker absolutely relishes it.
That's good. Can we bring up that block, though? The block he made from Haaland's shot, where he just threw his... I mean, it was dunk-esque. It was just threw his body in the way of it.
They're both brilliant at it. And I think I've got a feeling, I could be wrong here, but I think that the first time of Van Hecker against Haaland was the City game where they'd already won the title, and it was 1-0 where Nciso scored his worldie. And again, they were just knocking bells out of each other. And this is Van Hecker's first game. It was his first season. To watch those two. And I think that there is that kind of grudging respect that they are never going to acknowledge in public. That, I mean, let's put it this way, Haaland probably has to put up with big lumping centre-backs all the time. And let's face it, every centre-back has to put up with him twice a season. And no quarter is asked and no quarter is given. But like you say, Van Hecker, he appears to be about half the size of him. And yet, like I say, that lovely picture that someone's got of him basically jumping on Haaland and then throttling him.
They both went up for a header. And like Van Hecker somehow got his arms around him. And Haaland's got his arms around him. And basically, though, it was like a move from Strictly that... or WWE. I can't work out which one, but it was...
I can never remember the name.
There's a lot of love in that. I mean...
hate. It was a bit like the fight. I can never remember the name of the film. It's the naked fight between Alan Bates and Oliver Reed in front of the fire. That's what those two are.
Okay. Moving swiftly on, there was an opportunity for us to win the game. It was brilliant wing play again from Kurt Mitoma, and he put it on an absolute plate for Diego Gomez, and it was a tap in. But I just don't know how he's got it.
He's used the wrong foot. He's just used the wrong foot. Simple as that. That is a sweep in for a left foot. And whilst, you know, again, it's another one of my bugbears, AD, is that whilst a lot more players are actually now using both feet, there's still one or two who are not. And that was, and for a Premier League player, that for me is unforgivable, Jace. I mean, it's either that or what do you reckon? I mean, the commentary was saying he just got ahead of the pass. What do you reckon, Jace?
I think he was ever so slightly ahead of it. But there's that fraction of the second, to use the other foot, where he might not have been if he'd swept it in the way that you say. So I think that there's merit in that almost being all in one action. I think the thing that really frustrates me with Gomez is he, you know, all right, it was only Barnsley, but he seems to be capable one week of absolutely whapping it in from 40 yards. And then he's missed absolute sitters against City and Liverpool.
From 40 inches, yeah.
Oh, God, that Liverpool one was terrible, wasn't it? Exactly. But yeah, it was. I mean, you know, but you've got to be in the position to make to miss it, right? Yeah. And he's getting himself in the box. I mean, you know, he is a box-to-box midfielder. He does cover every single blade of grass, and he really does put in a shift, you know, and putting in tackles. And I mean, I really like Diego Gomes. I know he's not necessarily the most popular in our team, but I really appreciate him. And I think that he is still only young, and there is a lot more to come from him. And yes, he needs to be better at those tappings, but he scored two against Leeds like that. So it's kind of like,
well, he knows what to do. I mean, at the end of the day, he knows what to do. And listen, the next person might miss a chance, and you're frustrated. Like, I don't necessarily agree with the thing of frustrated that we didn't win, because let's face it, that was a game that could have ended 5-5. As much as we say we missed their chances, they missed some absolute howlers as well. Yeah, especially the ones that Ayari stuck on a plate for them.
Yeah, and towards the end of the second half, they were really piling on the pressure a little bit.
Exactly.
There well.
So I think that, you know, you could. Yeah, I know City had a lot more possession, but I can't say they did a great deal with it. And it wasn't until the last 10 minutes where they were taking pot shots where they didn't exactly pepper Verbruggen's goal, did they?
I don't think Bart really had to make it. Well, he had to make the save from Haaland at the end, but it was, yeah.
There was a couple that went straight to him. I think it was one in the first half that went through a crowd of legs and it went straight to him. But
okay, well, Jay, we have another trip to Manchester coming up this weekend against managerless Manchester United. Darren Fletcher is there. He's been talking to Sir Alex Ferguson. He's getting all his advice from him, apparently. Pascal Gross does like to play against Manchester United. It's going to be interesting to see what team we put out, though.
It's going to be very interesting to see what team we put out, but I really hope Pascal's in it. Just the rumours that we were signing him sent a few Man United fans online loopy. They really don't like him. I don't know. I think we'll put out... We'll still be in goal.
Yes.
We have a lot of options at fullback unless we're going to give Tasker a debut at Old Trafford away. I think.
Hertzler's sort of imaginative. He's not suicidal.
Yeah.
It might change one of the centre backs. So it's rare that they change both for something like that.
Yeah. Boscagli or
I think we'll see both of them.
You reckon?
I think so. Okay. I mean, Van Hecker and Dunk would be on the bench, I would imagine. But you got, you know, these guys need to be, they need games. They need to be playing. Because, you know, it's only
together, wasn't it? And then they kept a clean sheet.
Yeah. So, you know, I've got no issue with any of those to start. But we'll have to talk about that next week, because that is all we have time for today. So thank you so much to Jason Thackeray. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been The Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you all again next week. Cheers, bye.
I'm so alone, my love, without you. You're part of everything I do. When you come back and you're beside me, these are the words I'll say. Come on in and close the door.